Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. We are brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find it at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the good people at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They've been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA and their fabulous yearly writers conference coming up in September. I'll be teaching there. Lots of great people are going to be teaching there. Hope to see you there. It's going to be live and in person. And you can find out about it at PNWA.org. So I had an interesting conversation with a first-time memoirist, but a man who has a film producer, screenwriter, very much involved in the Hollywood lifestyle, but wrote a challenging memoir about his experiences as a sugar daddy, and that kind of went sideways on him. And it was just, he was a very honest guy. Was really, I thought, honest about his conversation about writing a memoir for the first time, particularly on this kind of subject, something I know a lot of memoirists struggle with. How do you deal with people's impressions of the things you're writing about? Anyway, really bright guy, interesting, has an interesting life, and we talked about it all. He is David Adam Winkler, and he comes from Hollywood royalty. Yeah, a successful film producer of such titles as Creed, Rocky Balboa, The Mechanic, and The Gambler, and the son of renowned producer Irwin Winkler, who produced They Shoot Horses, Don't They?, Rocky, Goodfellas, and more. The Arrangement, A Love Story, is his first book. And anyway, here's our conversation. I'm so glad I got to share it with you. Enjoy. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill.
Hey, so even though this will drop a week from now, but today, the day I'm recording this is your pub date. The day your first book ever that you, well, actually, I don't know. Is this the first book you've written or just the first book you've published?
Both.
All right. This is it. So how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm really, I 4 years ago I started, envisioned something, and it's actually here.
It's pretty well. You are no stranger to envisioning things and having them arrive in form. You hail from a pretty unusual family, in certain ways. They're like a lot of families. With their troubles and their quirks.
They're unusual in every way. They're unusual because of some quote unquote Hollywood royalty, but they're also unusual because they're really, really happy together, supportive. My parents have been married for 63 years, I think.
Yeah.
Happily too. And, to have that happen in Hollywood is pretty phenomenal.
Pretty unusual, and but you grew up in an environment that probably a lot of just not that many people, not just your family, but just then their circle of the life that they grew up in. Actually, what was interesting as I read the book, it reminded me a little bit of, and you can talk about this if you want, but I worked in restaurants for years, and everybody's been to a restaurant. Not many people know what it actually is to goes on to put a night's dinner forward. So I would talk about it, and it was sort of interesting for the people because they had been on the other side of it. You grew up in the world of Hollywood. You grew up in Hollywood, and so you knew it from both sides. Everybody's gone to the movies, but you know it from both sides. So was that experience, could that register on you that you had both views of that thing that most people do not from early on?
I knew growing up that I grew up in an exceptionally lucky way. Like I say in the beginning of the book that, I knew I was born lucky. Like I knew.
You really believed? It sounds good politically correctly, but did you actually think that when you were a kid?
I mean, I knew that I had been born. I knew that I had been like a cow in India in my last life or something. because I was appreciative because, you know, I looked around and I'm like, you know, I grew up in Southern California and in Hollywood and surrounded by really interesting people. You know, and not just that I was born into money, because my parents were not that, were not wealthy when I was born. They didn't become wealthy until Rocky hit when I was like 13.
Right.
But they were always successful. And, you know, I once directed a television pilot called The Picture, that was about 1968 Hollywood. And it was based on just growing up around, you know, having amazing directors and writers and producers coming in to dinner parties. And me and my brothers would just sit on the stairs listening, you know, like I knew I was in the world, and my dad, you know, had the most fascinating friends in the world. I knew that
you were clear on that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, I didn't want to be in that world. Like I wanted to be my own person. So when I was 24, I went off and opened a surf shop and tried doing retail, but you know, it kept pulling me back and calling to me. And then when I was 30, decided I wanted to be creative and start writing. But the irony is, and this is a great segue in the book, is that I wanted to write, but I didn't know but I never felt like I had anything special to write about. Like I had been born so fortunate, and everybody in my family is healthy. I'd never broken a bone in my body. Like my parents are happy and healthy. My dad's 92 and still going strong. Like, you know, like, but there's this thing of like the danger of comfort where there was no tragedy and no drama around my life.
Yeah.
And I never felt like I was like learning what other people were learning.
That's so like, interesting.
You don't learn from any, you learn from difficulty.
That usually is how it happens. I mean, think about so you're a storyteller, you grew up in storytelling. You can't have a movie about a person who gets up, has a nice day, goes like to work, kisses his wife goodnight.
And even though I became a writer at 30 and then a director, like all my writing was formulaic or thrillers or comedies. There was never a real personal, you know, emotional aspect to it. And then, of course, cut to I'm 50 years old and I'm in a relationship, you know, that's very unique, you know, for people who don't know what the book is about.
We will talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a sugar daddy and I'm in this sugar daddy relationship with this younger woman. And it's starting to go awry. And I realized, my God, this is my story that I'm going to have to tell. Even before the relationship was halfway over, I'm like, whether I spend the rest of my life with this woman or not, this is going to be my story.
Ah, you see, a true storyteller's instinct, David, because I write personal essay. I write fiction, but personal essay is really my thing. And I'll be in the middle of some crappy experience. I'm lost. I'm frustrated. Smack in the middle of the whole thing.
But this book
is a good story. I got material. Actually, Nora Ephron said, when I interviewed her, she said her mother wouldn't want to hear a complaint. She said, it's all material. Because her mom was a screenwriter. It's all material. Well, okay.
For instance, by the way, you should know, like I grew up with Nora Ephron, you know, coming to my family. She was married to Leggy.
Right.
And they would come to, you know, to my family's house every weekend for dinner or lox, bagels, cream cheese. And, you know, so like, this is the world I grew up in. And so, I'm still about to make another movie with Nick Leggy. Like, so like, you wonder what my life was like. Like, it's, you know, sitting there listening to Nora Ephron kvetch about things.
Well, it's so strange because celebrity, I don't want to go on about it, but it can't have the same. Maybe it means the same thing to you. It does to a lot of the world who are always on the outside looking in for the 98% of it. You were just on the inside kind of looking out, even though you yourself were not a celebrity. You were just surrounded by these people and seeing them sort of warts and all, I assume.
A lot of warts. And, you know, the thing about it is there's celebrities and then there's artists. And
right.
They're not necessarily always the same.
No.
And I was lucky in that my parents didn't court celebrity. Mm. They court artists and successful people. So the people who are around, you know, yeah, Sylvester Stallone's around because we made Rocky, but it was more because we made a movie with him that was, you know, a Best Picture. I mean, like, it was, you know, they were never celebrity, you know, they didn't cultivate celebrities. So it was more of just being around all these amazing people. And I wasn't one of them. I wanted to be one of them. I was not a person in any shape or the form, shape or form. And then when this story happened, I just knew this was my opportunity to do something that was different and dangerous and provocative and scary.
Yes. I want to talk about that, but I want to go back to one moment you mentioned rather blithely, but I think it's an important moment for all human beings, which is you're 30 years old. And you said, rather matter-of-factly, I knew I wanted to do something creative, so I wanted to be creative. I would say you're always creative. We're all creative, but you wanted to like express it. Talk to me about that moment, because there's plenty of people who would say business is creative. You know, it's creative making a surf shop, but you meant something different. So talk to me about how you knew that and what that was like.
I mean, I didn't know. I wanted to be more creative, I should say. Yes, I had a shop and it was designed creatively, and it was creative in some degree, but I knew I wanted to be more creative, and I didn't want to go in and become a producer. You know, I felt like my dad had that market captured, and I wanted to, you know, prove myself as a man on my own.
Right.
So I was writing screenplays, and I got lucky. The first thing I sold.
Wow. You
know, a formulaic comedy. And, but you know, and then I did that for a couple of years, and then I started directing, but it was always trying to do my own thing. So it was just always trying to up creativity and it was a challenge for me. You'd think that because I was born into this world, it wouldn't be, but it was a challenge for me. And it was a challenge, I think, for my father, who was a producer for many years and then, you know, started directing and writing himself mid-career. So, I mean,
I didn't even know that. Wow. Okay. Yeah,
look at his career. You know, he produced some of the most amazing movies, but he didn't direct until he was, you know, probably 50 or something.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I would think, I just don't know how you avoid the psychology of going into a business that your father is a pretty well known for and knowing that any success you had was yours, like really being clear on that. It would be so easy psychologically to take that from yourself because your parents are who they are.
Well, no, I mean, you're right. They're obviously you benefit from nepotism. There's no question about it. My name brings certain value,
doesn't care.
And then, you know, I wrote and I directed, but I was like directing Lifetime movies. I did a small movie.
Come on.
But I got it. I proved to myself that I could do it without my dad giving me money, without my dad doing this. And then I started producing with my dad because I had kids and I wanted more stability and I really enjoyed it. But yeah, there was always this question of you know, yeah, who am I that's different? What am I bringing to the world that is unique? And the book, I think it's safe to say, you know, when people read it and see how not only provocative it is, but how personal it is.
Oh, yes.
I think that I have... You know, I say in the end of the book that I could die tomorrow, creatively speaking, because I know I've done the thing that I always wondered, would I be able to do?
Well, okay. So the book is The Arrangement. It's a love story. And as you said, it's, you know, I teach memoir. I have a lot of clients who are memoirists. I write it myself. This is the world I travel in. Uh-huh. And I've talked to a lot of people who have dealt with like intense sexual abuse, poverty, violence, drug addiction. But in some ways, I think this is one of the most challenging topics to write about because of the stigma attached to it. Is that fair to say?
I would think calling sex work and
that's
sex.
Right.
I was afraid that people would think of me as some pervert. But I think that what has happened is enough people have read the book that word is out that that's not what it's about. Like word is out that this is about a man revealing his failures as a man, you know, not ethically, you know, I never got caught up in Me Too stuff, but,
right,
you know, just emotionally, I was a failure. And, you know, I think people, you know, go in wondering is what's the book about, but within 10 pages, they're like, oh my God, this is a very personal story that I'm admitting my failures as much as anything else.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And that is the core of all memoir. If you've got it, it's got to be, talking to a memoir. She was like, how am I complicit? That's what the memoir is all about.
Exactly.
Own complicity.
And even though I think in the end, you know, the mental health challenges that Jordan faced were much greater than mine, the book is really about my failures and my successes and my challenges and how I changed. And, you know, I read Mary Carr's, you know, How to Write a Autobiography. And, you know, I went in saying, how am I going to do this? And, you know, I even tried to hire a ghostwriter and even work, like he said, no, you got to do it by yourself.
Now you got to do it. It's this kind of book you got to do. You know, ghostwriters can do like celebrities tell my story kind of thing. To me, the difference between an autobiography and a memoir is the autobiography, I read John Cleese's autobiography because I love John Cleese and I wanted to hang around with John. And it was great. It was very entertaining, but it wasn't a memoir in my sense. That your book is, because I read it the same way I read a novel. I'm not in, you know, I don't know you, you know, obviously, but I want to find out what happens. And that's different. So you have a different requirement when you wrote yours. People aren't going to read it because they've seen the movies you produced, or that just isn't what's going to draw them. It's going to be for the story, the same way they would read anybody's book. Totally different challenge.
A fascinating story.
Yep.
With enough plot twists that people have actually asked me, did all this really happen?
Oh, good. Good.
And yes, and more. So really, it was hard to sort of, you know, structure it in a way so that, you know, I could say this happened, this is what this meant. You know, that was sort of my challenge going from like first draft to second draft. Was the first draft was just I spit out everything that happened.
Yeah.
And then the second draft was how to write a chapter, how to say this event, I'm telling this event for this reason, and this is how it fits into my arc and how I changed.
Our lives are not structured like books. And that's one of the first lessons you have to learn about the memoir, is that you have to find the art, find the story, because your life kind of unfolds more messily. You can't make stuff up, you know, because that doesn't work, but you have to create a work of art out of life, which is too big and messy to be that. So you have to be willing to reduce until you have something. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even the dialogue comes from, you know, texts and things we wrote. Like, I try as real as possible, but absolutely. I mean, you know, you have five conversations with somebody about something and you have to put it into one in the
book.
That's
right. Yeah.
Five of the same.
You know. Yeah.
So yeah, structuring it was very difficult, but you know, if you ever want to, you know, if you're ever giving a class on memoir and you want me to come on and talk to people about how I did it, I'd be happy to, because I learned so much about how to write a memoir.
See, and I would think that'd be very interesting, because you came from a different, I've interviewed a lot of people who write for the screen or the television film and then have gone to books or memoir, and they're so different in a lot of ways, but I would still think, even though you said you were writing quote formulaic stuff, you still had to understand story, beginning, middle, and end. I mean, all that kind of thing, right? And it had to have been at least a little helpful for you.
A lot of it. When I was writing screenplays, I would study Joseph Campbell's Power of Myth, and I understood all the structure and story arc. I knew when I was in Mexico that I was, you know, in the book that I'm, you know, at that midway point where look in his the darkest moment of his soul, and you know,
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I knew structurally I was doing it, and I wanted to write it. The worst thing to me, you know, is boring people, and I wanted to write it I didn't want it to be a movie, but I wanted it to read like a suspenseful novel. I wanted somebody to pick it up and say, boy, this is an amazing, interesting story. I wanted to get rid of a lot of the memoir tropes, like starting with 50 pages of my childhood.
Really? You know? You didn't want to do that?
I just said, I want to start on the first date. Like I plop you in on the first date. Yeah. I'm getting dressed for the first date and we're texting and there's never like, oh, you know, 30 pages of what it was like to go to Hollywood. And then I wean that stuff in as I went along. So yeah, storytelling as a movie maker taught me how to tell it, you know, in a very economic and suspenseful way.
I think that's it's funny. You're the first memoirist who's used that word, suspenseful. And I think it's a good word to use. It's never associated with memoir, but it's worth it because one of the challenge for the memoirist is to say, there's a difference between what's on the page and my life. And my job isn't to share my life with everybody as much as, you know, that's for your spouse or your good friends. And even then, you know, you have to reduce it down to really come in saying, I must be on some level entertaining. It's opposed to just confessing. That you can confess because you were very honest, David. You were a very, very honest man in this book about things where I was sitting there saying, man, I don't know if I would do that.
Until they read it, they won't understand just how honest.
You got to read it. He's a very honest man. And so you lay it all out, but good for you. That's the way you got to do it. That's the way you got to do it. And yet you kept it suspenseful. And so it was such... I commend you on setting that as your intention from the start, because that is not often the case for the memoirs. They say, I just want you to know about me. Let me just tell you about me. It doesn't work.
And by the way, also, it comes from the story, you know. I mean, people don't, you know, I don't know if we've talked much about the story, but, you know, I went into this, you know, relationship. I didn't believe monogamy. You know, I was amicably divorced, but I didn't want more kids again. I was somewhat closed off emotionally. I had some sexual issues. And, you know, I wanted to have a casual arrangement with this woman. And there's the whole aspect of being a sugar daddy that's kind of fun to read about.
Right.
You know, when I fell in love, I fell so hard. And then slowly but surely, Jordan started to reveal some mental health challenges. And ultimately, like the mental health challenges she revealed, you know, like I could tell you one or two, but there's like six of them.
Yeah.
And there was times during the relationship where I actually said, am I going to make it out of this alive? I mean, I really, you know, hang on.
Yeah.
All here. You know, I really was, you know, I'm like, it was suspenseful for me at the time. I'm like, you know, there's some crazy shit happening and, you know, is this going to be, you know, is my sanity going to remain intact through this?
Right. Right.
So I didn't have to create a lot of suspense. It just happened. And then it was a question of how do I tell it in a way so that it was.
What was the hardest part of it? Like, what was the hardest part in the writing of it for you to like, either just in the telling of it or just like figuring out whether structurally or just emotionally doing? What was the hardest part?
The hardest part was may surprise people because they're twofold. The first hardest part was saying, am I prepared for what people are going to say when they read it?
Right.
It's not everybody is going to read it and say, wow, you're an honest man. It's an amazing story. There will be people who don't agree with my lifestyle choices, attack me.
Yeah.
There'll be women, you know, feminists themselves don't agree about sex work. And some think it's incredibly, you know, it's a woman doing what they want with their body. And some women say, no, it's still degrading.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to ask, do I want to open myself up and my family to criticism? I was very worried, you know, how are my kids going to react? How are my family and friends going to react? So there was that question.
Sure.
And then I dealt with it by just, you know, communicating really well with my family and all them and letting them read parts and asking for their opinions and bringing them into the process. And then the other part is just the commitment to do it. I mean, to spend, you know, I thought it would take a year and then suddenly it's like 4 years.
Yeah. Welcome to the book.
And the pandemic helped because I really weren't making movies. So I had a year and a half to just do nothing. But
right,
that really did help me. But I think that's the biggest challenge to any writer, that they don't. That's the dirty secret, is the amount of time you have to put in. And, you know, in order to really write anything really well, you know, there's just, it takes sitting your ass in the chair, and it takes the ability for me to turn off the critic for 4 years.
That's right.
Just say, David, just finish it.
Yeah.
Do not view it. Do not think good or bad. Just tell the story, and then there will be a time that you will know you can walk away from it and the other people review it. But for 4 years, it took, you know, like, just I'm not going to think about what's good or bad. I had a writing assistant help me, you know, because I can't spell word damn. And terrible. You know, I had help. And whenever she would say, you know, are you happy with scene? I'm like, I'm not talking about whether I'm happy or not. It's done. Like I just wanted to get it done. And I think so many people caught up in you know, is this good after a chapter, and then they want to rewrite it. My ad is write a first draft, and then when I was done, I celebrated for like 5 minutes, had a glass of champagne, started the second draft, and then the second draft I didn't even have the champagne. Started the third draft, I didn't even stop. It was like done, sending it, starting it again. You know, like, so I think that's the hardest thing. That just, I don't think people, you know, it's really, I'm blessed. I came from a fortunate background and I've been successful in my field. So I have the time to do all that, but most people don't.
Well, listen, most writers are just do it while they do their day job and they do the thing and they're going through. But you know, the time, it took 4 years, but you have to remember, David, you didn't write in prose. You had to learn how to write a book. Like, that is a different way. I've written screenplays. That's not my profession, but I've done it. I understand it's a different way of thinking. And you had to learn how to think that way.
And I remember when I discovered it. I remember when I
figured out
what the thing was. The first draft was just, this happened, this happened, this happened.
Yeah.
And I remembered when I was writing like halfway through the third draft, like I was writing chapters and I was trying to come up with a name for a chapter. And I'm like, and I realized, for me, if I have one line at the end of each chapter that sums up the chapter that I'm going for, if I have one line and it relates to the title, and my writing partner would be like, my writing assistant would be like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, just trust me. We called it I forget what it was. It was you know, the point of the scene. When I knew what I wanted to say in one sentence, then I structured the entire chapter geared towards that. And that was the moment where I realized, I now know how to write a book, how to come into a chapter, how to get out of a chapter. But it took doing it. But the first chapter, first pass was just spitting it all out.
You learned a secret. Which is, it's what I learned about essays, is make it about one thing. Have one destination in mind. It can feel bigger than that, but you want a clear landing point.
It's like a joke. I know your punchline.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly. All right. So if people want to read this, first of all, are you going to be, I can't believe I'm even bothering to ask this question, but I assume you're going to be promoting it in some fashion besides on my podcast?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing a lot of podcasts and a lot of interviews. Unfortunately, the days of book tours are dead. They were never that, you know, from what I understand, you know, publishers hated them anyways.
Yeah.
And then when COVID came, they had a great reason to get rid
of right. them. That's right. That's
I am doing a book signing on Thursday in Los Angeles at Book Soup, which is which is the bookstore that I grew up going to. So
nice.
Yeah. No, I remember when I started, like I manifested, I had this fantasy. I said, if there's one thing that I would like to do is when my book is done, the first thing I want to do is I want to have a book signing at this bookstore.
Yeah.
This Book Soup on Hollywood where I started reading books at 13 and going every weekend with my father.
Nice.
I literally envisioned having a signing there, and it's actually happening on Thursday.
Isn't that great? Don't you love it?
Yeah. And then other than that, I have an Instagram, David Adam Winkler, where you can sign on and where you can contact me and ask questions, and you know, the book's on Amazon, and I did do a fun, it's not out yet, but I did do an audio version of the book where I actually had some of the people, I didn't have Jordan, but I have, right. have a woman playing Jordan's part.
Wow.
My friend Megan, come on. I have a couple other people who are in the book. Come on. So in scenes where, you know, there are a lot of dialogue, I have somebody reading. So it reads.
It's like radio theater. It's like,
right? You never want to bore people. And I felt like, well, that would be kind of neat if people.
That's cool.
Reading me reading, you know, whenever there's Jordan and I in a scene and she's talking, I had, you know, somebody read Jordan's part.
Hey, you may have accidentally revolutionized the audiobook industry. I wonder if this, because usually it's, I mean, I read my book when I had my last book come out, but it was me talking. It's my voice, my word. So fine. But normally it's one person reading everything. Maybe this will be something new.
Yeah, I think more and more now people are looking for original ways to do an audiobook. And I'm a huge fan of audiobooks. Like I just listened to Matthew McConaughey's
Yeah.
Which, you know, when you read, you'd be like, eh.
Right.
I don't get it. He sounds weird. But telling it in his own voice, it's fascinating. And then I just read Will Smith's.
Oh, interesting timing.
Which is really fascinating timing, because I literally read it, finished it a week before the famous slap.
You were probably there, weren't you? Were you there?
No, I'm not. I'm an introvert. I don't go to those.
Oh, events. You don't? Okay.
I don't go to parties and stuff like that. So it was, but it was fascinating because he read it himself, and he's Will Smith. So you know, I think there's some, if anything you can do to tell the story in an interesting way helps.
Eddie Izzard has his memoir, and he reads it. Oh, it's hilarious. And he adds stuff because he can't stop himself, because he improvises even during.
I love that. God, you see, now that.
Check it out. It's good.
You know, that's like Russell Brand. It's the same thing. Yeah. Like Russell Brand, like when you read the book, you're like, I haven't had enough, can't drink too much coffee to keep up with it. But I bet it's the same thing. Like you just, you know, much more interesting.
Well, all right. Congratulations. The arrangement, it's out. People, it's there. Go get it. It's fascinating. Reserve judgment. This is a man's journey. Reserve any judgment you have.
I think that's the key. Is I ask people, you know, because I don't write from a place of, you know, in the beginning saying, please forgive me all the things I'm going to do. I put you in my mind frame, and you can see that, you know, I was not a perfect man, and hopefully they'll stay long enough to see that I changed and grew.
Who is? Even I am not a perfect man. Maybe hard for you to believe. Even me. All right. But listen, I got one more question for you, my friend. And here's what I want you to do. You've been writing for a long time. I know this is your magnum opus, but you've been writing for a good part of your life. And so finish this sentence. If writing, all the writing you've done, has taught you anything, it has taught you what?
I think self-introspection. I think all the writing, even the fictional writing, is about examining your heart and your emotion and your soul and trying to learn and grow. That's what I've learned.
You're speaking my language, my friend. Dave, congratulations. I hope you're proud.
Thank you so much. I'm very proud, and it was really nice talking to you about it.
Learning. I agree with David. Learning. It's a good thing. It's what I try to do. I want to discover. I want to learn everything I write. Yes, every single thing. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, my friend. And I want to thank all of you out there listening to this. I hope you're enjoying it. Keep learning and go keep finding things you love and keep doing it. Keep doing what you love. Can't go wrong.